to the Committee of the Whole meeting being held here on Monday, September 28th at the City Hall Council Chambers. Before we get on with the agenda for this evening, I have something I would like to... Kevin Burns, and he goes on to say, it's been a very difficult few days for our public safety team with the loss of Officer Kozar and now Mrs. Olson, who is the fire chief, Steve Olson's mother. When any member of the City of Geneva family suffers, we suffer with them. We also celebrate and honor them by showing our respect for their pain. Therefore, I respectfully request that the City of Geneva flags remain flying at half staff throughout this week in honor of Mrs. Olson and in deference to our fire chief. Lastly, he asks that if we can, I would lead the City Council in a moment of silence at the beginning of the meeting this evening to remember Mrs. Olson. So please, may we have a moment of silence. Thank you. Let us now begin. Item number one is to consider the consent agenda, of which we do not have one. So we will go on to item number two and the second item of business. The first item of business is item A. We are to consider a draft ordinance extending the cable franchise agreement through March 31st, 2010. The issue is one in which, as you noticed, normally we would contract with Comcast for a period of a year. This contract is only to be extended for a six-month period. And Stephanie will address this issue and explain to you the reasoning why we are only going with a six-month contract at this point in time.
Okay. As you recall, last November we actually went in for a nine-month extension with every intent of getting this resolved with Comcast and getting a franchise in place that would last longer than 2 years or a year extension. We were well on that track. We thought we had negotiated a new franchise agreement for 10 years. We had a couple questions. We went back to Comcast with those questions. They haven't answered those questions, and they came back with a completely different agreement the last time they sent it to us than the one we had all just met on. There was a little bit change in personnel there as well, so that may have factored into it. I don't know. So unfortunately, we're here tonight to ask you for another extension. We've asked for 6 months, but it would be my goal to have that accomplished before the end of the year. We've spent a lot of time and energy on this. We thought we were there. We're not. So that's why we're here before you tonight.
Any questions? Alderman Pollack.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Stephanie, can you just give us a brief history as to why Comcast and why is AT&T or other providers not involved?
AT&T has a franchise with the state, I believe it is, so they don't have to do it with the city. The laws had changed a couple years ago when AT&T came into the market, so they could opt to go under the state franchise or they could do a local franchise. Essentially, we end up with some of the same provisions, but Comcast, we've always had a local franchise.
And has there been any interest from other, perhaps, local providers? Was Comcast the only local provider
right now
in town?
Comcast is the only game in town other than AT&T is coming. You know, they're slowly getting their U-verse. But, again, they're under a state franchise, so we don't negotiate with them locally.
In the satellite TVs, it's not applicable?
Correct. I guess. I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't believe it is either.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes.
I may, just to expand on that, in the past, we have contacted other providers. I recall specifically Wide Open West was one of them, and Pete may recall the others, but I know that we contacted several of them and invited them to come in and sit down with us to talk about providing service to our residents, and they wouldn't even do that. They weren't interested because of the infrastructure capital that they would have had to have invested, and they wouldn't even come in and meet with us.
I see. So this is really the only way that Comcast can compete with AT&T, because AT&T already has a state franchise?
Well, AT&T goes through the state statute and follows that. Comcast could do the same, but they choose not to. They choose to keep a local franchise in place, and being that they had one in place when the legislation went into effect, they can maintain that if they want to. And they've chosen to do that. It's just the devil is in the details, and trying to get that worked out has been a challenge over the years.
What would happen if we didn't have a contract with a local cable provider, i.e. Comcast?
If they were providing services to our community, but we didn't have a franchise?
Correct.
I would suspect that they would be under no obligation to pay us any percentage of those franchise fees, which they are now under the franchise agreement.
And what percent is that?
5%.
5%. And do we recover any fees from the state franchise agreement vis-a-vis the state, allegedly?
Through AT&T,
yeah.
We are receiving 6%. Because it's the 5% franchise fee, and then 1% on top of that for PEG, programming, public educational government, which when this new franchise agreement eventually comes forward, that'll be discussed as well. So, but under the state statute, if someone chooses, if a company chooses to abide by those regulations, then if the community chooses to have the 6%, including the PEG fee, the provider doesn't have a choice, and we chose to do that.
With Comcast this time
around? With AT&T.
And then, so this time around, will it be reflective of the agreement with AT&T?
With the agreement that is on the agenda is the Comcast agreement. So when
correct.
That comes forward, yes, staff will be talking about the 5% franchise fee and then a potential additional 1% or additional fees to be used for PEG programming. So when that comes back within this six-month period, because that's really all this is doing is extending what is in place now so that those details on the franchise agreement can be worked out. But when that does come back, there is an element to that agreement that does talk about PEG.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Pollack. Are there any questions? Alderman Flanagan?
So just let me clarify if I can. So what we're saying is that the agreement has been in place, but there's only details left for the last 25 years?
We had an agreement in place originally that
right.
that ran however long, and it's all in the ordinance here. And then for the last several years, we've been doing two-year extensions. What we were looking at is getting to another 10-year agreement.
Right.
And since that time, we've passed various ordinances and things that were covered in the old franchise that are now covered under city code or other rules that we're just trying to clean up the original ordinance.
Okay.
And part of the details that we're looking at is the PEG issue. That's one of the things that we're still negotiating with them.
Okay, so that is still on the table, too. Thank you.
Alderman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem. In the 8 years we've been negotiating this extension of the franchise, they've changed my fees many times, always in the direction upwards. Now they're making a change to digital, which I can understand why they're doing it. The whole business of telecommunications has gone digital, much to the consternation of some of my neighbors who've tried to install the digital equipment unsuccessfully. So much is happening, and it's happening very much faster than we can seem to get a franchise renegotiated. This has been going on since March 2001. Last time this came up, I asked for a shorter term on the extension. I guess 6 months is as short as we can make it. I'm very upset, and it sounds like this can go on forever. They'll continue to raise their fees, and they will continue to change the terms under which they offer us services. It's not clear to me that we have much power in this negotiation, since they're clearly negotiating many small cities against one another, and they're a very large company. And does it make any sense for us to just say that we would appreciate if they would go with the state system? I don't understand what the difference is between a...
I think under the local control, it does give us a little more flexibility, and some of that areas has to do with customer service. We have citizens who will call directly to City Hall, and we can put them immediately in contact, or we can follow up. With AT&T, we don't have any of that control. They can just call and complain to us, but we really don't have any leverage. That's one of the big issues. We also hopefully get some funding for some of the capital for the PEG and those kinds of things. So there are some benefits to having a local franchise, which is local control.
So your recommendation as a staff member would be to continue the negotiations in the hope that we can come to an agreement. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'll vote for the extension. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the council members? Anyone from the audience would like to comment on this issue? Very good. Thank you. Let's continue on. Item B is to consider...
We need a motion.
I'll make that motion, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem.
All right. Second.
Grant the franchise of cable television system in the city of Geneva with Comcast and Cable Communications, Inc.
Okay, a motion is made by Alderman Hill and seconded by Alderman Marks. So those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Let it be recorded that it was unanimously voted for. All right, continue on to number letter B, please. Consider the certificate of acceptance for Geneva Professional Clinic. This is sort of a house cleaning issue. We were to approve the certificate of acceptance for the professional center on Blackberry Drive and Bridger Road. All the electrical improvements have been installed and are in compliance with specifications.
I'd like to make that motion to consider a certificate of acceptance for the Geneva professional.
Okay, a motion has been made by Alderman Flagon. Do I have a second?
Second
by Alderman Vogelsberg. Thank you. Any questions on the issue? Anyone in the audience have a question? None. Oh, those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Let it be recorded that it was unanimously approved. Thank you. Let's continue on. C, we are to consider the approval of a resolution for the City of Geneva to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the Illinois Department of Transportation for sharing NevTech proprietary data.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made by Alderman Piper, seconded by Alderman Marks. Any questions on the issue? Anyone from the audience? All those would be... Oh, yes, Alderman?
Sorry, Mr. Singer, to interrupt at the last
That's
moment.
That's quite all right.
It just occurred to me that within this is an agreement that we will not provide or sell any NavTech data to any other person or entity. I presume we're somehow covered for malfeasance by someone in the chain of command between NavTech and us if this data became public somehow. Someone would be subject to a court suit for releasing proprietary data. I don't understand how state data is proprietary, but I'm sure they can cover themselves on this. Are we somehow covered if this data was somehow due to malfeasance on the part of someone in the City of Geneva that this data was released? I guess I addressed the question to Ms. McKittrick.
All right, that's fine. But I do seem to feel that we have a similar agreement presently with the county in this area. So I suspect that the wording is quite
the same.
And part of this is the data that the state is getting, they're under an agreement with NavTech that they're getting it for free for a period of time. So during that period is when we can't sell it because it's information that that company could sell. So they don't want us, obviously, circumventing the system. As far as protections, There's some indemnification clauses. I don't know that I have the exact answer to your question, but really this is, it's at no cost to the city. It's information that we can use in our GIS systems. It was requested by our city engineer. She was familiar with this information and asked if we could get into this agreement.
I think I understand why it's useful to the city. The only question I had is if for some reason the data was inadvertently...
Alderman Brown, it's on page 6, item number 17.
And then there's page 4, too.
There's terms and conditions that protect the NAFTAC data and shall be governed by the laws of the state of Illinois without giving effect to it, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay.
Thank you, Alderman Paulette.
The city could not be liable for the malfeasance.
Correct.
There's 4, too.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions on this issue? Anyone from the audience? None. Well, the motion is made, has been seconded. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Let it be recorded that it was voted on unanimously. Let us continue on now to item B. To consider the declaration of surplus property and equipment.
So moved.
Second.
The motion is made by Alderman Piper and seconded by Alderman Flanagan. Any questions on the issue from the Alderman? Anyone from the audience? Well, the motion was made. It's been seconded. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Let it be recorded that there was a unanimous vote on the issue. Let us continue on now to E.
For the benefit of the public watching on TV, we might point out that it's a 2000 Ford Crown Victoria from the year 2000 and a Ford Ranger pickup from the year 1998, which we are selling as surplus because they have passed the useful life, but they have been well maintained by the city. So if anyone is interested, they should look on the appropriate Illinois website, which is called
eBay.
eBay.
That's eBay.
Post it on eBay. Thank you.
Alderman Brown, since you broached the subject, I'd like Mary McKittrich to comment on the issue regarding the fact that we had moved in this direction previously to sell some of our surplus equipment, and we've been very successful at that. Would you please comment on that, Ms. McKittrich?
Sure. We have been successful, Mayor. We use eBay as well as iBid. iBid is the state website, which is fairly new. The police department's been using eBay for some time now. But most recently, you recall, I think it was back in the spring or summer that we had a list of surplus property that we brought to you and asked permission to post it on iBid. And it was a variety of tables and chairs and file cabinets, office furniture, and virtually all of that was sold through the iBid website, and the funds have gone back into the general fund. Not huge dollars, but several hundred dollars that we received from this furniture that had been setting up in the mezzanine over at Public Works for several years. So Public Works is happy that they have the space again to use, and we're happy that we recouped some dollars for it. We didn't sell the ice machine, however, if anybody's interested in it. An ice machine, but we're going to post that again, so we're pleased.
Thank you.
Okay. The next item of business is E. There is going to be a presentation regarding a permit application, review process, and policies pertaining to windows in the Geneva Historical District, and our preservation plan. Carla is going to do the presentation.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Singer. Thank you. Before I get started, first I want to ask Mr. Unch if he would be so kind to darken this half of the room. And then I also, actually before you do that, I wanted to recognize three of our commission members who are here tonight. We have Mike Bruno, Al Hiller, and Tom Hansen. So, and whomever else happens to be out there in cyberspace or television as well. Let's see here. Our discussion tonight, as requested, will focus on the Historic Preservation Commission's window policy. And first, I wanted to get started by giving you just a couple statistics about the commission and the reviews over the past almost 4 years. I've been in this position. It'll be 4 years in November, and I've been keeping statistics since then. There have been 303 permit applications within the historic district and on historic properties for all types of projects. Of the 303, 220 have been reviewed by the commission, and 83 have been reviewed by staff. There were 33 permit applications for window replacements, resulting in 8 denials. And of those 8, three applicants have appealed that the commission's decision. And we have our chairman, Scott Roy, coming in right now, too, as well. Just wanted to recognize him. The three appeals mean that there's less than 1% of the number of permit applications reviewed that are appealed. And again, the City Council, you all are the appeal body, and any applicant may appeal the Commission's decision to the City Council. Just back in how we got started, the first historic districts were listed in the National Register in 1979 and 1982. The commission began as an advisory commission in 1982. The historic district, which includes 600 plus properties, was designated in 1987. The preservation ordinance was revised in 1994, outlining that the commission's reviews and actions on permit applications became binding, which means that any exterior improvement which requires a building permit must first be reviewed and approved by the commission. In 1995, the City Council adopted the Secretary of the Interior Standards for Rehabilitation as the city's guidelines for conducting permit reviews on historic properties. And for the purpose of tonight's discussion, window replacements do require a permit. Storm windows do not require a permit. Window repair does not require a permit. Why are permits required for window replacement? Well, there are safety concerns with possible enlarging of the opening or creating a new opening in the wall with having structural headers over the opening. There are also requirements for egress at 5.7 square feet, which must be met. Window replacements must also comply with the International Energy Code by having a minimum U factor of 0.35. And since 1994, in the historic district, permits for window replacements have been reviewed because of the change to the building integrity. There are 10 Secretary of the Interior standards, and this is 5, and here are the other 5, and no, I'm not going to read all of them to you. These are established by the Secretary of the Interior. The standards are used by the National Park Service when they review preservation-related projects and for review of tax credit projects. The standards are also adopted by many municipalities as their review guide, including ours. The focus on the standards is on repair first, replace in kind. Don't destroy history, historic building materials, or elements of a building that make up its architectural style. Don't apply details that aren't there. For example, for an Italianate building, you're not going to want to put prairie-style elements on an Italianate building. And finally, new construction and additions should be differentiated from the historic building. There are 3 standards that apply to windows, 2, 5, and 6. And in brief, those 3 standards state that removal of historic materials that characterize a property shall be avoided. Distinctive features that characterize a property shall be preserved. Deteriorated historic features shall be repaired rather than replaced. And that the last one, number 6, goes on to talk about when there's severity of deterioration, that replacements should match in kind, matching in design, color, texture, and materials. The Historic Preservation Commission adopted its own policy in how to handle windows in 2000, and the policy was developed directly from the SOI standards, presenting approaches to contributing buildings versus non-contributing buildings, existing additions, new additions to historic structures, new additions to non-contributing structures, new construction, and the like. You have a copy of the window policy on the dais for your review if you haven't seen it recently. The emphasis, like the SOI standards, is on repairing windows first, and if not possible, then replace in kind. And directly stated from the policy, if repair is not feasible, replacements should be of materials, detailing, and styling that are consistent with that of the original or existing historic windows. So for tonight's discussion, I'm first going to talk about some options on non-wood replacement windows, and then I want to talk about wood replacement windows, then a brief discussion about energy efficiency, and then a discussion about repair and compliance with the SOI standards and the viability of repair as an option, followed by a conclusion and staff recommendation. Getting into non-wood replacements, when I use the term non-wood replacements, I'm talking about vinyl, vinyl clad, aluminum, aluminum clad, or fiberglass windows. On the pro side, replacing deteriorated windows with a new window replacement is an easy solution and a quick fix to improve curb appeal and energy efficiency, especially if the existing window and storms have not been well maintained. A lot of the non-wood replacement windows are billed as being maintenance-free. On the con side of non-wood replacement windows is the loss of a building's historic materials. A historic building is all of the building envelope, the walls, the roof, the siding, and the windows. Removal of historic wood windows and installation of vinyl, aluminum, or fiberglass windows, materials which were not originally present in the building, means that the character and authenticity of the building is forever changed. Often when non-wood replacement windows are used, the openings are filled in, resulting in a changed exterior presence. And one thing to make sure that you're all aware of is that use of non-wood replacement windows may forfeit the possibility of the homeowner receiving the tax freeze through the state. And another con for non-wood replacement windows is that although billed as maintenance-free, the whole unit typically must be replaced if a part of the glass is broken or if a small part of the window is broken. And with all replacement windows, performance is a function of the cost of the windows and their corresponding quality of design and construction. Moving on, I thought I would get into some case study examples. This case study is here in Geneva.
You know where that phone's coming from?
Okay. The property owner here replaced true divided lights, which you can see on the left. True divided light windows are windows that have small panes of glass separated by wood, and that wood is called mullions, with a vinyl window with sandwiched muntins. Muntins, they're not mullions, they're muntins, sorry. Okay, so on the right is the vinyl window, which has the sandwiched muntins. Now, from the street, someone might say that these replicate the historic windows. However, when I look at this, I look at the depth of the window, and the depth of the window is different in the vinyl replacement window. The replacement, it has a thicker casing. The window is set back from the facade of the wall, whereas the original wood windows on the left would likely have been more within the facing of the wall. That would be closer to the wall surface, creating a contrasting texture to the stone. Looking further, the 6/6 muntin pattern is not correctly replicated. The vinyl window has an 8/8 pattern, and the sandwiched muntins don't provide the depth and the texture that the wood muntins do. The other interesting thing about the vinyl window, for me, with the sandwiched muntins, it creates a mirror-like appearance, whereas a true divided light window actually provides texture. Looking at another case study, here again a comparison between a historic wood window and a vinyl window replacement. It's not quite the same. The replacement is set back in the window opening. The casing is thicker. The muntin pattern is not quite replicated. And the muntins are sandwiched between the glass, again creating a mirror-like effect. This is an example where where historic windows have been removed. These were unique windows that gave a quality and aesthetic that is not present in the vinyl windows, where the top portion has been filled in. The casing is thicker, and the muntin pattern contrasting to the brick is gone. In addition, at the depth in this case projects forward. Moving on. on to steel windows. Here, steel casement windows have been removed and replaced with vinyl windows. The center window has now become a full picture window, as you can see in the bottom right corner, with no muntins or texture. The thickness of the casing also detracts from the overall Tudor style of the building. Moving on to wood window replacements. Like other replacement windows, wood window replacements can be an easy solution to an existing deterioration or energy efficiency solution. A high-quality and well-maintained wood replacement window has the potential longevity of 40 to 50 years. Some of the cons of replacing historic windows with a wood replacement window will be the loss of the building's original or authentic building materials and erosion of its historic character. It is also important to point out that when using wood replacement windows, this may also exempt a homeowner from receiving the tax freeze. Wood replacement windows can sometimes be good matches to historic windows, but in some cases they don't quite replicate the originals. Again, performance with replacement windows is a function of investment and quality. This example is directly from the Marvin window site. And Marvin bills these windows as designed to meet historic design criteria. These are true divided light windows, which are likely similar to the type and style of window originally present in the bungalow. The wood windows do not have a thick casing around them, and the wood frames have not been covered, which helps to retain the historic integrity. With this example, this is not in Geneva. This half of this townhome had severely deteriorated windows, and they were missing. The originals were long gone. Wood replacement sashes were installed, which have thin sash profiles, likely replicating the historic windows that were once there. And what's interesting to point out is that mullion, which is the wood piece between the windows, it's highly decorative and has been preserved rather than covered up with other window replacement products. This case study is in Geneva. The applicant wanted to replace his wood windows on the second floor as they were deteriorated and were hard to open. In this case, staff did research and found that the existing 6/6 windows were not original and that 1/1 windows were originally here. Thus, the HPC approved a replacement window that would match the original window. A similar case in the Fifth Third Bank. This is the second story window. The applicant proposed replacing the window, and the HBC approved a wood replacement after being presented with estimates for repair versus replacement. Regarding energy efficiency, as we move through a new era of focusing on sustainability and greening of our homes, the question is, what really is energy efficiency? What is sustainability? One thing for sure is that sustainability and green building are fast-growing fields. The industry has quickly learned that green building is not about tearing down a building to build a new green building in its place, but adapting our existing buildings to be more efficient. Historic buildings have many attributes that are now promoted as green design. Structures that use indigenous, renewable, and repairable materials. Structures that use natural light and ventilation. Therefore, the greenest building is the one already built. This brings up the idea of embodied energy. Embodied energy is the energy that is used to acquire building materials, to make building materials, to transport building materials, to build buildings, to run and maintain buildings, and ultimately, if chosen, to demolish buildings. Reusing historic buildings should be preferable to building new structures based on the savings in embodied energy. So if we get into a discussion about sustainability and energy efficiency, it can't just be about heating costs or utility costs. When we discuss window replacements, where do the windows go when they are removed? Likely into a landfill. How much energy and fossil fuels are being used to transport the windows to the landfill and to transport the new windows to the new site? So when you have wood windows, which are made of old growth wood, wood that is durable and can be repaired, why not repair them rather than replace? In the last year, the National Trust for Historic Preservation came out with these 10 tips to green your home. Window replacement is not on the list. First on the list is to complete an energy audit. For most buildings, the majority of energy loss is through the roof or non-insulated walls. Adding insulation to the attic, basement, and crawl spaces, as well as properly maintaining wood windows, making them airtight, will drastically improve energy savings. For most homes, it will cost from $12,000 to $15,000 to replace all windows. Of course, this figure varies depending on the type of window and quality used. Most energy savings after replacing a window is about $50 a month, which in our climate at 6 months of heating and cooling equals to about $300 a year. Therefore, to recoup the cost for windows and energy savings, it likely will take 40 to 50 years. However, it is often possible to make up for the $50 a month in energy savings by performing other energy efficiency projects like repair, which is sometimes more cost effective. So getting into repair, the pros of repair are that original or historic building materials are preserved. This retains the authenticity of the building, and looking back to sustainability, repair is an environmentally sound approach. Existing wood windows in homes older than the 1930s are made with old growth wood, which has a durability and sustainability for 100 plus years when maintained. Original windows can be repaired. If one piece of glass is broken, it can be replaced. If one section of wood is deteriorated, it can be replaced or repaired. Original windows are energy efficient. A single pane glass and storm window provides the same double glazing that is present in window replacements. The con of repair is that it is perceived to be difficult and more expensive. Compliance with the SOI standards. Repair of historic and original windows complies with the SOI standards. Original windows are often the eyes of a historic building, providing character and texture. Original windows are a piece of craftsmanship and handmade. Historic windows maintain the original window opening size. They are made of durable and sustainable materials. Double-hung windows provide natural air circulation as the top sash can be lowered, creating a double wall opening. And the glass pane and storm window, again, provide the similar energy efficiency as a replacement window. And finally, maintaining historic windows is culturally sustainable. Getting into a couple case studies for repair. This is an example of a wood window in the historic district. It was repaired at a cost of $300. A new storm window, which was added on, was $125, and what's interesting to point out about the storm is that it stays fixed and has a glass panel that can be removed.
It's glass.
And what's interesting here is that this the repair of the window was likely cheaper than a quality wood window replacement, and it has the similar efficiency to a double glazed window. This house at 327 North 2nd Street has recently undergone moving and rotating and extensive rehabilitation. Midway through the project, the developer approached the HPC requesting window replacements, and the HPC suggested that he investigate repair. In the end, repair was cheaper. At the bottom, you can see an original window on the left before and after it was repaired on the right. This is the Sansoni building on State Street. These buildings, the wood windows on the second floor were repaired. The wood windows at Niche, including the lovely arched window, were also repaired in the last 2 years. And again, on State Street, this transom window was repaired as part of the building's unveiling, removing material that was covering the transom area. The square pattern in the transom reveals a contrasting texture to the storefront. Because of the standards emphasis on window repair, the HPC has held window repair workshops over the past 4 years. And the gentleman in the striped shirt, this is Frank Rojas. He runs a window repair business out of Aurora, and he is a resident of Aurora. And personally, he went to the Aurora Preservation Commission and wanted to replace his windows and found out he could repair them, and he started his own business. And so it's a very interesting story. And, let's get into how does the HPC review permit applications for window replacements. Each building permit application for window replacements is reviewed for its own merits. Application forms are required with support documentation, which usually includes photographs of deterioration. Applicants are required to supply a cost estimate for replacement versus repair. The repair estimate must be by a contractor who performs window repair work. If replacement is cheaper, then the HPC approves replacement. Replacements must match in style, design, and materials. And I thought I'd show just a few photos of interesting windows here in Geneva. We have all types of shapes and sizes, and they really show the character and authenticity of our historic buildings. conclusion, the City Council has given the HBC the responsibility of protecting structures that are significant in the history of the city. The HBC does this by applying the ordinance, the standards, and the window policy. HBC reviews every application in detail. And the staff recommends that the City Council retain the window policy and its related requirements. Applicants are always able to appeal a decision to the HBC.
Thank you, Carla. Are there any questions? And may I alert you that the questions are to be asked. They are to deal specifically with the issues that have been broached here at this point in time. Alderman Flanagan.
First of all, Carla, I'd like to thank you very much for giving an in-depth overview of our windows regarding the HPC and the responsibilities and how a homeowner can go through the process of whether trying to either replace or repair or whatever, and try to keep the character and authenticity of the structures here in Geneva. I do have a question that I asked earlier, and maybe you could just give me a straight, for the benefit of the council. I asked if if we didn't adhere to the standards, if we deviated from those standards, would we have an effect on our accreditation for the historic preservation? And if you could share that with everyone, I'd really appreciate it.
Geneva has been a certified local government per the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency since 1997 as a CLG that enables us to qualify for grants on a yearly basis. But to be a CLG, we have to maintain a certain level of review standards and that as well. I did ask that question of Mike Ward at the Illinois Historic Preservation Agency, and let me pull out his response because I don't want to talk. Mr. Ange, what's your recollection of it, of what Mike said? I'm sorry, I can't find it.
We were both copied in on an email. My recollection was that Mike felt that the basis for the commission's work was the SOI standards, and certainly they expect the work of the city to generally comply with those standards. He did indicate that it's a local regulatory control, so we have some discretion. But he was cautious in his response back. He was pretty much saying that if we start deviating too far from these accepted principles that are really applied throughout the country, that there is some question that comes into play down the road, perhaps, if we're deviating extremely from these national standards, the U.S. Secretary of Interior standards.
He also emphasized that this may forfeit the possibility for tax freeze for some people if they choose to have a window.
And I think that's important.
Yeah.
I think what's key, if I might add, we deal with folks that are going through this process, and typically Carla is involved in a teaching process, really, here of informing people of programs like the tax freeze program. It takes you got to get your arms around this a little bit, and there's a lot of direct work that has to go on between the property owner and the Historic Preservation Office. And so to the extent that we can lead them in a direction of following the SOI standards, it really helps in their dealings with the state. We've had instances where folks have had a strong desire to participate in the tax freeze program and to be approved through that program. The tax benefit is substantial. It's a freeze on your taxes for 8 years, and then there's a phase-in to bring it back up to the market afterwards. And we've had individuals engage in work that runs averse to the program at the state level, and they've actually taken out improvements or redone improvements after the fact, because they forged ahead, they did the work, and then said, well, gosh, we really want this freeze, and so then they backtracked and tore out. In some cases, we have a couple of instances where they've actually taken out windows that were newly installed to get them into compliance, a replacement rather than a vinyl replacement. So it's important that we work as much as we can as a city in matching up and applying these SOI standards to properties in town, particularly those folks that want to participate in the tax freeze program.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the council members? Alderman Ruhlgenberg?
Oh, thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Thank you. That was a really good presentation, and I think that I know I needed to hear a lot of that stuff. My only problem, and I know I have a bias because my husband's been in the home building industry, but he doesn't sell windows, okay? I'd like to just say that. He doesn't sell windows. He doesn't even like windows. So I understand that when we're talking about green, it is more green, obviously, to keep your old windows. But I don't think people replace their windows because to be more green. I think they do it because not only are they more energy efficient at the moment, but they're also maintenance free. So there's, it's not apples and oranges, whatever. Yeah. But my only problem with this is I think it's awesome. I love the downtown. I love how all the historic, it's perfect. And for some of the people that have lovingly restored their homes, it's artwork. But those are the people who have that passion and they have the money or the time or the education about historic. What I don't know is how do we achieve a balance for the people that don't want that? The people that want it, that feel that there's a better window out there for them that can look very similar. Now, I know the divide. I can tell the difference between a divided light and the muttons being in the glass. But I think now there's so many products that look the same, like you said, the Anderson windows. So how do we find the balance? Because if you say, I don't want the tax credit, I don't care, I want what I want, do you think we should loosen the standards, or do you think we should just keep it as it is, and those few people, and they are few, just come and appeal to the council?
She's forward. Question to answer. I think what's interesting is that the HB has been very fair and reasonable in how we've approached this, and really from a review standpoint, and it's maybe not really addressing your comment or your question to start with, but recognizing that not every window can be repaired, not every historic building can be salvaged or rehabilitated and that kind of thing, and there is a reasonableness that has to be applied. And that reasonableness from the commission standpoint, in my opinion, is that we recognize that deterioration is possible and that a lot of times people want to replace their windows because of the deterioration and the issues they're having around those things. So they can document that information and provide the balance as to the reasoning why they want to replace their windows. I know that's not really addressing your question. For me, it continues to also go back to maintaining the historic integrity and the authenticity. And if a historic building is the whole building, so if we change the window policy, what's next? Will it be the siding policy? Then what's next? There's nothing left. So it just becomes, for me, the building has to be looked at from its comprehensive basis.
Just speaking of HPC, I think because of this small number of appeals, obviously that process is working. Absolutely. That's why I'm wondering how we change it. You know, to me, this is very similar to the tear-down infill. How do you achieve the balance for all people in one area? Because each side thinks they're exactly right. And even the few people that do come for appeal, they feel just as passionate of their right to be able to replace products. So that's all I was wondering.
If I might, just to jump in here to add to what Carla was saying, what the council sees on this topic tends to be the appeal cases when they pop up.
Absolutely.
And yet you can see that there's an awful lot of work that's going on that you don't see. That's the hard work of our Preservation Commission and of Ms. Kalfas. I think that the real answer to the question, in part, is to provide to the folks that we're seeing come through the permit process, where they're in the midst of trying to make decisions about windows on their properties. And obviously, they've done some research ahead of time. They're applying for the building permits, so they've done some level of research, or maybe they've been approached by window companies, and you know, they've been given the sell job on replacement windows. What I feel our role is, as staff, and as a preservation commission, is to provide balance in the information that applicant has. Because on the one hand, we've been hearing about Marvin and Pella and Jelwind and all the different window companies that are out there that make these windows, and you can do the research independently online very easily, and you can talk to representatives, and you can get that whole side of the story. But there's another side of the story that relates to repair of the windows and understanding the value of what you have. And there are firms in the area that do window repair. And so part of our job is to provide that information and just explain to people, we're not going to be out there doing advertisements for companies that repair windows, but we are certainly going to make applicants aware that there are companies that provide that service, and that we have numerous examples. You can contact even individual property owners in Geneva that have gone through that repair process to ask questions, to get sort of that other side of the story. And it is interesting that when we get into that dialogue with people, that not 100% of the time, but some of the time, people begin to see the value of what they have, understand the value of the older windows that they have, and that there is a viable alternative to just outright replacement. And it does come down to an evaluation of the condition of those windows, because clearly there have been instances where information is presented by the applicants where the commission has made the decision not to proceed down the path of repair. The windows are just too far gone. Let's be practical about this, and let's move on to getting agreement on a replacement window that respects and honors the character of the architecture.
I know there are others. There are a number of aldermen that are seeking to be heard. I have a list here. I'll begin with Alderman Brown.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. I would like to mention that being one of the people here who was there at the beginning, I know that the people who worked hard to establish this, to find out what it took to establish a historic preservation district, worked hard to get the referendum passed, worked hard with the council to get the original ordinance passed, had in their mind a large fraction of the effort should be education. And the city has been blessed over the years to have some very talented people serving on the Historic Preservation Committee, and some very talented people like Mr. Unch and Ms. Kalfas working for the city, who have taken that aspect of this job, which is education, to heart. And I know many people who've gone to the HPC and come away really having received a lot of very valuable information, and I think that's by far one of the most important things the HPC has done, and it's done it wonderfully over the years. And Carla's presentation tonight is just a continuation of that. And I hope lots of people in the city listen, because it applies to every building in the city, not just the Historic Preservation District. I think they've done a wonderful job. I think your recommendation is fine, except it lacks one thing. Your first recommendation is that the City Council retain the window policy. I agree, and it's related requirements, and encourage the HPC to continue on its job of helping people with their permits and educating them as to the options that are available, because it's certainly hard in this modern world to understand all the options that are available. Your second recommendation, that to remind people that this process does have within the ordinance that applicants are always allowed to appeal the HPC's decision to the City Council, because indeed the City Council, when we set up the ordinance, did have some fairly strict strictures on what the HPC was supposed to do, and they were supposed to obey federal guidelines, etc. There is always an out, and that is if you believe you have a special case and the HPC has not convinced you through their efforts to talk to you and educate you as to the options available, you can always come to the City Council, and indeed the buck stops here. I think this is a perfect recommendation, and I would stand one behind your recommendation 100%. I don't think we need a motion or anything at this point, but I certainly accept your recommendation, and thank you for your presentation tonight, Carla.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alderman Brown. Alderman Piper.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. I don't necessarily know if there's been a recommendation as much as it is just a review of what we currently have, and it seems to function, and we have a system of checks and balances, and we seem to be the end of that. You're right, we only see the appeals, we see very few of them. I guess I'm not sure why we made you go through all this work. I mean, it was great. It was a great presentation, but kind of knew how it worked. And, you know, like I said, we have a system set up. It seems like it's not broke. I'm not sure why we're even considering fixing something like that. But it was great, Carla. I think we get it, and it functions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alderman. Alderman Baladra.
I agree with Alderman Piper. With regard to maintaining the balance, I think it's an interesting issue, problem. I actually owned an older home. It was built in 1906. We put vinyl siding on it and kept the old windows. We found that repairing the windows once every 20 years, but painting the whole house every 3 years was problematic. I liked having that choice, but the thing is, I didn't live in a historic district. I think that what we need to remember is that the city, it wasn't just a city council. The city comes together and does these things, and the city of Geneva decided that there was an area that needed to be protected, that needed to retain its as-built character, and they established a historic district. The homeowners and property owners who buy into the historic district do so knowing what they're getting into. They know what's expected of them. Living in any neighborhood comes with responsibilities, but I think that living in a historic district comes with additional responsibilities that most of us as property owners don't have to deal with. In this case, the need to try and maintain that as-built character needs to be balanced not with the homeowner's burning desire to put plastic siding up or anything like that, but with the common sense of whether or not replacement, repair, any of these things are feasible or possible. The conversation began when we looked at a building last week that had been fixed. I don't remember the exact conditions of the fix, but it had been fixed not so very long ago, and they were looking at doing the same thing again for something like 60 windows. This starts to become impractical, and so the flexibility that we have built into the process lets us take into consideration the circumstances of individual cases and decide accordingly. So I agree with Bob. It ain't broke. Don't mess with it.
Thank you, Alderman Maladra. Alderman Pauling.
Thank you, Mr. Singer. Craig and Bob, I don't necessarily disagree with you, and Carl, I certainly appreciate your presentation. What I'm afraid the direction we're going is that we've created a slippery slope, and that is, as Alderman Maladra stated, when does something start becoming impractical? And certainly the case that was brought before us regarding Mr. Schoding and the building down by the river and his 60 windows, as Mr. Maladra would say, is impractical. But how is that any different than the single-family dwelling that has 3 or 4 windows and they're on a tight budget? That, too, would be impractical to them. I don't know the answer to this question. And that is, are we going to encourage every business resident in the historic district who wants to put in a technologically energy efficient window in place of an old growth window, if you can find one for a comparable price? I don't know. I think we're proceeding down a very slippery path right now. And frankly, I don't know the answer, but I'm sure you can come up with one, Carla.
I think I can answer it. Yeah, we are going to encourage them to do that. As a city, the city voted. We have a historic preservation district.
So
they bought a house in historic.
Slippery slope is not where we are.
Right.
Water here.
I'm sorry.
Next person to speak to the issue is Alderman Flanagan.
Well, I can defer to Alderman Piper if he wants to make a comment right at this time.
I apologize. I think that's kind of where we're at now. We voted for this district. It's been there a long time. You buy a house, historic district, you kind of know the rules going in as to how it's going to work. Now, we have the process set up that if it is not feasible, if there's an economic issue, they can come to HBC. They can appeal to us, which is what happened down here, which, quite frankly, it sounds to me like nobody took a real close look at what was going on down here until the last minute. So, and that is not feasible to do what originally was being asked.
Wait, you speak to the issue of...
Yes, if that's okay. I do not want to confuse these issues, but since it's coming up, I want to make sure that we address it, and I want to make myself very clear.
You're saying you can't.
Oh, it doesn't...
Excuse me for interrupting.
That's fine.
But because this is on the agenda next Monday, the appeal is on the agenda next Monday, it would be highly inappropriate to discuss any aspect of that appeal at this moment. So I would encourage you to stick with the broader discussion of the policy and the ordinance that we have in place, but not the specific appeal, because the petitioner is not here, and it would not be fair to any of the public that wants to be here for that discussion.
Agreed. I agree with you, Mayor. I apologize.
I will defer the floor to Alderman Flanagan.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mayor Pro Tem. I know that Alderman Piper felt that we didn't know, I mean, there wasn't a clear reason why we brought this subject up, but I think over the years, I've been sitting on the City Council, I've didn't realize that there were so few window requests or appeals, but there were a number that had made me feel concerned about it. So I, in my enlightened way, decided to say, well, you know, maybe there should be a time that we should revisit this and see if there is a way to put vinyl-clad windows into the scheme of things and broaden our horizons in the HPC realm of restrictions and standards, etc. And with Carla's help and direction and her presentation, I thought she did an excellent job of saying, and I agree, I think we should leave it the way it is and not go the direction of the vinyl clad windows. But at the time, I felt that there was a need for opening up the discussion again. Whether it was right or wrong, it was just my feeling, because I was getting concerned about people coming to us on occasion asking for these vinyl windows. Didn't realize that there were not as many as I had thought there were. So, just to clarify.
Thank you, Alderman Flanagan. Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. Carla, you said in your statistics and appeals that there have been 33 window cases and 8 denials. Can you tell us if all 8 denials were residential, or were there some that were commercial or for rental properties? Or do you have that information?
I have that statistic here somewhere.
By the way, your presentation was very good, and I agree with the residential part of our present HPC regulations and processes and the opportunities to appeal. But I do have some questions about commercial buildings, which would include buildings for rental properties in which to live. So, but on the my first question is the 8 denials, what type of buildings were those, do you recall? Or do you have that info?
Let's see here. Three were strictly residential. Three were residential that had been converted to commercial, and two were strictly commercial.
So the majority of the denials the minority of the denials were residential, strictly residential?
Actually, the minority was strictly commercial.
Oh, okay. But then there were three that were residential trying to be converted to rental property,
correct.
Right? Okay.
That were commercial.
Okay. My next question is, on the ordinance, I'm a little bit surprised to see that the storm windows do not require a permit.
Correct.
Does that mean if a resident replaces wood windows or doesn't even replace wood windows and leaves them there and put on metal frame storm windows, that's okay?
Yes, the city does not review storm windows in or out of the district.
So it could really change some of the appearance of the home if metal-clad or vinyl-clad storm windows were added to a home, couldn't it?
It is possible, yes.
All right. So I think, is that one of the national regulations that we've adopted that, or...
Well,
something that we're doing differently.
Our ordinance only allows us to review things that are required for a building permit.
Okay.
So as we move forward with potential ordinance revision, this may be something to add as a permit requirement in the historic district, or revision to our ordinance that specifies that the commission would review all exterior changes regardless if they need a permit or not.
I recall in a home in which I owned in Wisconsin, we had some wood windows that were, we decided not to replace, but we did decide to install aluminum-clad storm windows. We were not in a historic district, so we were not affected one way or the other. But so that is permissible. And there was a slight appearance change, which I guess we've been allowed to. What kind of this building, we remodeled it how long ago, and did we replace it with the same kind of windows in City Hall that were on there originally?
I shall defer to Mr. Lencioni, who is here in the audience.
He's got a better memory than most of the rest of us.
Which remodel?
A nice handoff, Carla.
Yeah, he's going to get a tie, didn't
he? Windows were replaced in 1986. Under the 1986 renovations. At that time, they were wood windows, and we replaced them with vinyl clad. With aluminum clad windows.
But that was before the HPC.
That was before HPC, perhaps, or not?
Well, it was the commission was advisory in 1982, but didn't become binding until 1994.
I see. Okay. So I think that's kind of interesting that. Not a residential building, of course. And that's my point. My point is that I think that using the historic preservation guidelines developed by the Secretary of the Interior are very good and maybe could be tweaked to make even better in relation to storm windows. But my point is that on commercial buildings or... this is not a commercial building, of course, but nor is it residential. But I think that we have demonstrated that we preferred to save money on maintenance by putting on metal-clad windows. I believe that's what really did happen. And sometimes they're more a little bit more energy efficient. So my only concern is the difference between residential and commercial. Buildings that have been redesigned for commercial purposes. And I think that we do need to take a look at that in the future and to make some differentiation based on the intentions of the developer or the remodeler or the new owner of a building. Because in my few years on the City Council, I know that we've been tripped up twice, at least twice, on residential buildings. One family had already purchased wood windows because they did not take out a permit, and had already spent over $10,000 on, on non-wood windows. They purchased, I think they were clad windows of some type, not wood. And another, we lost a case in court. when he put on a different type of a window that would have been required in the historic district. So I think we're on a little bit of, not slippery ice, but thin ice in some of our regulations, especially in the area of commercial buildings. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Michelle.
May I respond to your comment about storm windows? Mr. Unch pointed out the storm windows provision, which is on page 2 of the window policy, if you want to take a look. It's in the middle of the page. And it says, the use of exterior storm windows should be investigated whenever feasible because they are thermally efficient, cost-effective, reversible, and allow the retention of original windows. And item number 3, reversible there, means from a preservation standpoint that storm windows are viewed as not being non-permanent. So I think this is one way the window policy addresses storm windows, although it is not an item that is currently a permit requirement.
Thank you, Carla. Are there any other questions from the council members? Anyone from the audience? Yes, sir. Would you please come forward and introduce yourself for the matter of record, please?
Mike Bruno, 522 Fulton Street. I'm in the Historic Preservation Commission. Just wanted to interject, because I went through the trouble of making these little wooden blocks here as a visual aid. I've got some old growth lumber and some new growth lumber that you might want to pass around the dais. When we're considering original windows, we're not just talking about snapping out, you know, one commodity wood window, maybe throwing in another commodity wood window. The materials that are used in, you know, these windows that could be 100 years old, these are effectively extinct. You couldn't make a window of that quality, even if you wanted to, at least not on any production basis. But when you see those samples, you'll see the tight grain density, the weight, you know, the structural strength.
Is it possible to buy old growth wood today on the market?
Well, the only way you can generally do it, you will come across the occasional old growth log in high production lumber processing. That's by chance. A good deal of old growth is salvaging old timbers from barns and that type of thing. In fact, that piece there is from a beam that came out of one of our old houses.
It seems to me that that's a possible growth industry.
Well, unfortunately, it takes several hundred years. So if you want to start...
And leave it to your grandchildren, right?
There are lots of forests out there that are approaching old growth at this point.
Could you...
Replanting started almost 100 years ago, so...
Could you discuss the 40 or 50 year wood that windows that they're now installing? When Carlo was talking about the wood windows that were 40 or 50 year duration, or what type of wood was
it?
Do
you want me to speak to that? Well, I don't have an official stance on it, but I don't know when forestation went to the fastest growth lumber. I know at some point, actually, I know one of our preservation commissioners, at some point not too long ago, they actually had to change building construction codes because the fast growth lumber in our managed forest just didn't have the structural strength.
You know, so it rotted quicker and
it took on more water. It just didn't have the beam strength, as it's called. I've got a 100-year-old house. The roof is held up with 2x4s, and we had a fire in the 20s, and it's still, you know, perfectly flat.
The window replacements that I was speaking to a couple weeks ago, we had one of our commission members who's an architect who deals with window replacement and window repair regularly. He investigated the newer replacement windows out there and described that some of the higher end wood replacement windows, because of their construction and because of the quality of their design, and if you maintain the wood as well, which means painting regularly every 5 years, that it has the longevity possibility of 40 to 50 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Carla. Any other questions? Anyone else from the audience? All right, there's no need to take any issue on this product. I'm sorry, Alderman Vogelbaum.
Thank you, Mayor. I was just going to say that even with my comments, that's just to present an argument for balance. But I completely support the ordinance that we have. I think a lot of us feel like it's not broken. And because there's always the chance of,
appeal,
thank you, that it works. I just wanted to bring out the other point of view because, just like the tear down and infill, it's a luxury to only see things one way, you know, and I think there's two sides to this, but the way the ordinance reads and the small amount of appeals, I think it's absolutely working.
Thank you.
So that's all I want to say.
Thank you, Alderman. Anyone else?
Thank you for filling in the words.
Thank you. It was very interesting.
Thank you, Carla.
You're welcome.
Discussion regarding the permit application / review procedures and policies.
It's the same item.
I think we've been doing it.
The historic district, which we just did.
We're ahead of schedule.
Ahead of schedule is correct. So we go on into new business. Is there any new business to be discussed this evening? Anyone from the audience have any new business? Yes, Alderman Pauling.
Thank you, Mr. Singer. I've had some constituents who have come to me and asked, because we are the first level of government, that we encourage Representative Foster to mandate the traditional 72-hour public comment period before voting on a health care overhaul bill. And I said, all right, I'll bring it up. I don't know what more we could possibly do at this level than encourage the constituents to contact our representative if they still have a question. That at this level, that's all we can do. So I said I would mention it, and thank you.
Would you care to convey a phone number or an address our constituencies could refer to?
406, what is it? 1114, 1114. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Alderman Pauling.
Where are they calling?
Bill Foster's office.
Are there any other issues come before the council this evening? If not, I would recommend that we have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Move made by Alderman Hill, seconded by, was it?
Marks.
Oh, Alderman Vogelberg? Alderman Marks. Thank you.
Chuck,
all those good. In favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Phone number like E.
We are now adjourned. Thank you.
That was nice. Sure. Hey, nice. You enjoyed your bike in this.
It's chilly.
I'd like a little ending there.